You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
This is the IT and the D Show, episode 186. Special guests today are Tom Lawrence from Lawrence Systems, talking about Lawrence Systems and properties of Lawrence Systems. We got Stephanie Menard in here, writer and podcaster extraordinaire. And last but not least, Jeremiah Dr. Hook from DailyDetroit.com. We're going to be talking about what's going on in the city, some events and some interesting news going on with his business.
Today's episode is brought to you by Fellows Shredders. You may think that all shredders are created equal, but only Fellows are built for durability and maximum performance, so they get the job done every single time. Plus, with features like a 100% jam-proof system and silent shred, Fellows Shredders are at the forefront of technology. To learn more about the world's toughest shredders, visit Fellows, F-E-L-L-O-W-E-S.com.
Damn, you're good, Nary. Dave, you may fire when ready.
The following program is intended for mature audiences.
This is Max Headroom, and what you're about to witness is one of the most sinister-sounding intros to a trailer to one of the greatest epics ever.
It's I Love the 80s, and this is 1986.
This is Jack Burton and the Pork Chop Express, and I'm talking to whoever's listening out there.
This is Billy D. Williams. Bob and Dave and I are enjoying a Colt 45 right now. And remember, IT in the D, it works every time.
There can be only one.
God, where do you guys think you are?
The Library of Congress?
Detroit?
Beyond the Sun?
Any of those right?
Take him to Detroit.
No! No, not Detroit! No! No, please! Anything but that! No!
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Then don't come! Shut up!
What is tequila?
It's like beer.
You dig, you IT geeks? This is Dre DiMatteo from Sons of Anarchy. You are listening to IT in the D.
You remind me of the babe.
Babe with the power.
What power?
Power of voodoo.
You do.
They're what?
Remind me of the babe.
What happens when you tap the angry beaver in the bum hole?
Exactly. Come on.
I'm trying.
To help this, I'm calling a break. We'll come back to this.
Then let's just say they're widgets.
What's a widget?
You have no boots.
No.
You have no gloves.
No.
You have no hat.
No.
You have no scarf.
No.
You have no scraper.
No.
How long have you lived in Michigan?
All my life.
You, sir, are an idiot.
I don't care.
What's up, everybody? This is Billy Zapka, Sweep the Leg, listening to IT and the D Show. No mercy.
I may have to wipe the boots off.
One shall stand, one shall fall.
Are we at a break yet?
I'm bringing him in closer, Merlin.
You're going to do what?
Hi, I'm Ernie Hudson, and you're listening to IT in the D. All you nerds out there.
Nerds! Nerds!
Nerds.
Nerds. Nerds!
What is a nerd?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
Hey, laser lips! Your mama was a snowblower!
This is Scott Steiner, Big Pump Pump. The IT in the D show is your hookup. Holler if you hear me.
You're in your underwear, I'm in my underwear. Hey, let's hang out.
No, I'm sorry, honey. I have a headache.
I definitely want to see Bob in his underwear. That's a fact.
I can't say no, and I don't really want to.
Well, especially with the back doors open.
It's just too big.
How big?
It's way too big.
I can get it all the way in.
You could kiss me on the veranda.
Lips would be fine.
Really? Should we talk about this?
Tag team it. Should I keep going, or should I stop?
Say it! Say it! Oh!
I want to hear you say it.
I'm totally into Dave, but not
right.
So much Bob.
Hey, Wagbo, what you waiting for?
Why don't you call me sometime and you have no class?
Sportos and motorheads, geeks, sluts, bloods, wastoids, dweebies, dickheads, they all adore him. They think he's a righteous dude.
Negative Ghost Rider, the pattern is full.
We just lost our clean tag on iTunes.
This is Robert Hayes, Tit Striker to my mother. When I'm not hanging out at the Magumbo Bar, I'm listening to the IT and the D Show. It's worse than Detroit.
Is there such thing as a meat hangover?
I love my Monday meat steak.
Hey, folks, this is WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and you're listening to the IT and the D Show. Tough guy. Ho!
Mustang, this is Voodoo 3. Remaining mags are bugging out.
So, what would you little maniac like to do first?
The question isn't what are we going to do. The question is what aren't we going to do.
Ludicrous speed! Sir, had you better buckle up? Ah, fuck all this! Ludicrous speed! Go!
Ludicrous speed!
Dave is so proud of his new intro. He's glowing right now. Welcome. Thank you for listening. This is episode 186 of the one and only IT and the D Show, broadcasting live here in Studio One, Podcast Detroit, in beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. Bob the Sales Guy, Dave the Geek, Nuri the FNG. Find us online, itinthed.com. Shout out to Randy and Ian filling up the Twitters. You can follow us on social and subscribe to us anywhere.
Well, Randy's here. There's video.
I know Randy's here.
I am the pod crasher.
Randy's. I didn't want to tell everybody he was here. Fine. Subscribe to us.
I don't want people thinking they're allowed to just show up.
Fine.
This is like a really bad version of my fat Greek wedding.
Podcasts are sold. Can I
go? Sorry.
I know. I'm not reading either. Do us a mark your calendars. Tomorrow, we've got the inaugural, I guess it's the second one, but it's going to be the first one of the regular, the IT that he presents, the Ann Arbor chapter. It's going to be tomorrow, the 7th, at Connor O'Neill's up in Ann Arbor. Check us out. We're all going to be there from 5 until question mark. And then on the 16th, the day before St. Patrick's Day, the granddaddy of them all, the Pinksel Party at the Majestic, hiring managers and more hiring managers and recruiters and more recruiters. And a awesome DJ. And
smooth deep house from Nuri Gojan.
Deep house and cans of PBR. And it's all about the job. So
all the good things.
Yeah, free to get in. No crappy speakers or sponsors. And your name won't be sold. And up to date, we're up to like, we think 2,400-ish got hired through those events, through just meeting people. And
that's what we get for not taking kickbacks or anything. We just know when people tell us stuff.
I'm fine with that. I am totally fine with that. But at the same token, no one has to bring a resume and no one's getting postcards to fill out job forms. So we do try to do it the right way, or we try to suck less.
Yeah, exactly.
But hey, we have an awesome, awesome guest lineup. Tom Lawrence is in the house from Lawrence Systems. We've got a ton of cool stories. He's also the host of the Sunday Morning Linux Review podcast. Got an awesome story to talk about with a big vendor in Seattle. Well, maybe if you want to talk about that, we'll talk. I want to talk about that. Also in studio, we got Stephanie Menard here, writer, also podcaster extraordinaire, Shot of History, and many other fine podcasts.
You're not the department store though.
No,
not, there's no making big money at Menards. No.
Save big
it's
money.
It's different.
At, I know.
I want to save big money.
At Menards?
Yeah. And then last but not least, Jeremiah's here from a.k.a. Dr. Hook from DailyDetroit.com. A lot of big news, and we want to talk about what's going on in the city.
I want to be one of the SpaceX people. How do we make that happen?
Like $80 million bucks?
Like that's what it costs?
I think it's $80 million. It's either $20 million or $80 million.
Yeah, the positions have been filled.
That's right. We talked about this Saturday. You and Megan are going.
Yeah, we've already said we're doing
from
it.
The way station so Saturday, they trumped us. They got us by virtue of
yeah,
time.
Yeah, sorry.
I read an article that says they're probably not going to actually be able to do it in 2018 because basically the amount of time it takes to come up with that equipment, the equipment is currently untested. They've got a really, really strong plan basically to get this accomplished next year. So,
but I thought, after all those YouTube videos and everything, why we haven't been back to the moon is because there's creepy stuff on the dark side of the moon. That's why we can't go back. But they're going to
Transformers.
Right.
Yeah.
That was
there's
part
evil
of the
Transformers.
Right.
Evil
Transformers.
Yeah. There was like John Glenn videos going like, we're never going back.
Right.
Like weird things.
Yeah.
I don't know. Elon Musk has got a lot of really good ideas. And he took that idea, earlier this year from from somebody tweeted at him to getting it done in a week.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll see.
Tweaking something on your car to getting to the moon is a little bit different. Delta of,
hang on.
Of yeah.
Are you sure?
Is he going first? Because I don't want to be the first.
Oh, he's not going.
I'm sure it won't be him.
Then I'm not going. If he ain't going, I ain't going. you go on a lap around the moon, Elon, and then I'll get a Kickstarter and I'll pony up and I'll go.
Are you gonna replay the '60s when we had that dog they sent into space and then the monkey,
Laika,
and then the monkey and everything else and then the person? Or are we just going to go straight into humans?
Well, I think the production schedule said that they were going to first do an equipment test, and then they were going to do an unmanned mission, and then they were going to actually send people. So basically,
don't send a monkey, though. I've seen Planet of the Apes. You know what happens. The Mark Wahlberg one, messed up shit happens if you do send a monkey up there. It's the last thing I need.
But basically, all of a sudden, there's a Wahlbergers in your Greek town.
But basically, you're flying in a beta 0.3. I'm not sure I'd want to do that for $20 million.
Have you seen his tweets about the Rudds? You know, the Rudd tweets, right? The rapid unexpected disassemblies.
Paul Rudd?
Yeah, exactly. They're not explosions. They're not explosions. Crashes.
They're Rudds.
Yeah.
This was a complete success. What do you mean?
Wait. Well, I like his last one before the land rocket was, look, the pieces are bigger. We're learning more. That was literally his tweet. Like, I blew up a $20 million rocket, and there's bigger pieces of it this time.
It's like a half torso and a leg. It's so cool.
How does he tweet when it blows up a person?
His PR guy in their 70s is going to write the best book ever. With all the things that they came up with for those kind of terms.
Yeah. For all the things they wouldn't let Elon Musk say. Because I have a feeling he's slightly filtered.
So, you know what we found out last week, too? One man can take down the internet. So, with everybody thinking the internet was slow and everyone found out it was an AWS problem on their S3, they actually released what happened.
Yep.
Basically, what happened at 9:30 in the morning, an authorized team member using an established playbook, executed a command, not Order 66 from what we understand.
No, execute. It was he was trying to just, you know, standardly take some servers out of rotation.
Right. Just remove a couple servers, and one of the – he basically entered wrong code.
He typoed.
Typoed, and then it took them all out.
One command to rule them all.
And then
– and in the darkness
internet
plunges.
Fall down, go boom.
It's amazing how many sites actually use S3. 148,000 websites, 121,000 domains. And then the best part of this was that the S3 status webpage itself was broken.
It was down. Yes.
Yeah. Because it itself ran on S3, right?
Yes.
I mean, I get it.
The sites are so green.
I mean, one of my previous companies had a guy who worked for me who was updating a SQL database. And he did update where this equals this. And his update where was wrong. Basically overwriting every single record in our database, and it took our platform down. It's totally – I get how one person can do it, but we don't think about that. We think about cloud. It's like this other people's computers.
Magic.
It's managed.
You know who was really happy that day? EMC guys.
I don't know about that.
Hey, remember when your stuff was all local? You didn't have to worry about somebody else's computer going down? Remember?
Right. Well, not just that. I mean, what about your cloud strategy, right? So if you put all your eggs in an Amazon bucket – and Amazon goes down, basically, what do you do? How do you like flick the manual switch back at the data center you no longer have?
It's business.
Yeah, what's your DR for the cloud?
No, it's stocks, it's business, it's diversification. Anyone that puts their eggs in one basket in anything, you're asking for it. It's amazing how many people I see, Fortune 100 companies, 50 billion plus companies, have all their stuff in their own basement in a DR site from Iron Mountain. Hmm. But you think about like, wait, it's all there. Like, what do you do? No DR, no, nothing off site. It's, I don't know. These days, it's like the cloud. Why do you go to the cloud? Well, it depends on the application, right?
Right.
Which is in anything. If you have an application that works better locally, then stay local. Right, you don't put it in the cloud just because it's good. Like so everything, whatever.
You didn't have to rewrite it in Java.
No,
you don't have to rewrite it in C#. You don't have to rewrite it. You don't do it just because there's a new tech.
But what I'm saying is the egg. I don't want to say the egg's in your face, but if that's your strategy, you put everything there. Like then you're gonna. That's what you get.
Yeah, if you don't have redundancy in like an Azure cloud or something like that. But the reality is, even for CTOs, it's hard to sell going, I need redundancy because Amazon had a bad day out of 365 percentage wise. Some people still would have a hard sell.
It's all about the ROI, right? Like and you got to take it through finance and deal with all that stuff.
Well,
I'm going to pay double in hosting fees to double, like back up the stuff.
Do you want 99.9 or 99.59?
Right. So no, that's
what's that going to cost you?
The people that get stuck in a garage over this because of the IoT devices. They couldn't open their garage doors. And like, well, I heard during times before, like nobody knows how to do anything anymore. So like, oh no, I press the button on my app and it doesn't open the garage. Now what?
No, but here's the thing, Dave.
Yeah, no one knows what that little hanging thing is in their garage.
I like AWS. I'm a fan, and it's interesting how their SLAs are 99.95.
Mm-hmm.
So you think about the 5.9s. No, 9.5. You know what 9.5 is in terms of minutes a month? 25 minutes a month of downtime.
Mm-hmm.
So they
just used them all.
So basically, you get all of them in one day.
They used them all for the year.
Right. They don't even have to. No, that's a month.
Yeah.
So I don't even think they probably have to write small checks, but it's nothing.
Yeah.
You know, in the grand scheme.
Well, GitLab just happened. This happened, a month ago now? Yeah. GitLab lost 12 hours worth of customer data and things like that without any redundancy because anyone who had all their stuff in GitLab goes, well, there went 12 hours of data we input on there. So this happens. Typos. Whoops. You know, get better playbooks, update them, put some bounding on the playbook going, you can't type in 11 when you meant 1 or 2, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then one of our favorite topics, because we are always concerned about the birth of Skynet, is that Microsoft now has an AI that writes its own code.
This is so damn cool.
Is it cool?
You say cool. I say chilling.
Yeah. What is it? Like, how far does it go?
We don't know yet.
Well, they say right now it's limited to like 5 lines of code. So think if you code a logging routine, it's the same logging routine that everybody else has coded since the beginning of time. Uh-huh. So basically this thing can go through all the other code that's ever been written and basically make your code for you based on those what works and what doesn't, which is pretty damn cool. And my first thing is like, well, what happens to coders? What happens to people who write code every day for a living? And Microsoft's like, oh, don't worry about it. We're not taking your jobs. We're just making you work on more complex problems.
Yeah, it's because it can't think. We promise.
We need QA still.
Well, the greatest risk of coders is still if Stack Exchange goes down. I mean, if we can't copy paste, so that would.
Well, half the code of the internet's plagiarized anyways, yeah. Right? I mean,
especially the hidden half.
Right. So, Nery, you shot out a book, basically, but it's an interesting article. I was able to skim it. I did a little too lazy, didn't read, about basically autonomous vehicles and just your absolute end of privacy.
Yeah.
And we've been talking about this with IoT. We've been talking about this since your phones have GPS on it. Like, don't you dare track me and don't you dare take away my Google Maps, right?
Right.
But it's getting to the point now where Nest and Canary knows when I'm home and when I'm not mm-hmm. home.
Your TV knows everything you watch.
They listen to all the things.
Uh-huh.
Echo's listening to all my things.
Uh-huh.
And now it's getting to where your car, I put an automatic in my car. They know where I'm at. They know how fast I went. They know everything about me. You can't, you know, and then now with autonomous vehicles, it's basically taking it another level.
Basically, the article, the byline was basically everything everywhere is recording information and sending it to the internet. And then autonomous vehicles have these crazy 360-degree high-definition, high-frame mm-hmm. rate video. So basically, everywhere they drive, they're going to be capturing all the data around them for, I think they call it telemetry, right?
Yep.
So basically, I know where everything is, speed limit signs, addresses, things like that.
Because it has to. Otherwise, that's the eyes.
And then drones. And basically, there's nothing we're going to be able to do anymore to hide at some point. And it will start in the dense areas, like, you know, big cities, New York, Detroit, Chicago. But sooner or later, everyone's going to have one of these things. But Elon Musk said by, 2021, that all cars will be autonomous? And just think, you're walking down the street.
Dude, he's a bright guy, but...
We also said that we're going to send people to the moon next year. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, no, they're going to have drive assist. I bet you 2021 there's going to be driver assist.
Well,
theoretically, that's already there.
It's 20 years to turn a fleet.
Sorry, Tom.
Yeah, well, Elon Musk promises he thinks everyone else is as smart as him. So he says 21. Right? He doesn't deal with the general populace.
Right.
I do. it's not good.
But driver assist is already there. I mean, you've already got the cars that will parallel park themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
You've already got the cars that will slam on the brakes for you, that sort of thing.
Right.
And there
stay in the lanes. Yeah. I don't think that's there yet.
No, and there may very well be, you know, some level of autonomous vehicles out there. That's fine. But, you know, it's like I've said a million times. The issue you're going to have is when you have logic programming driven autonomous vehicles on the road with vehicles that are driven by idiot humans, that you're going to have issues.
Right.
The thing that freaks me out there, the headline was ubiquitous video, which uh-huh. basically means everywhere.
Yeah.
So now the case it gave was I can tell you what type of clothes everybody wore in a certain area at a certain time frame. So I can predict fashion trends.
EMC guy everywhere going, yay!
But I mean,
so more storage.
I was going to say, that's what I was going to say is imagine how much storage that's going to take from
my video. God.
But well, I mean, you've got cities like London, though, that have been doing cameras across yeah. their entire area for many, many years, and many urban areas have centralized cameras now with command centers that have all this stuff.
But that's different.
This is way different.
Those are set up by the cities and by the police departments and that sort of thing.
In public areas.
That's my next question. Is who gets to tap into this video?
Right.
You know,
that was going to be my next question as well. Like, okay, now does this become ubiquitous law enforcement as well? And what are our rights around these kinds of things?
Hey, let's go find every car that was in the vicinity of X when Y happened.
And then let's haul them
facial recognition.
Well, how do you opt out when every car is doing this, right?
Uh-huh.
Basically, it's like, Nuri, we saw you jogging the other day. We had 20 cars tag you jogging. But you're only jogging at 5 miles an hour, so we don't think you're actually jogging. And you were carrying a cigarette. So we're going to tell your insurance company that you're smoking. And I mean,
Nuri, you said you were at a business conference. I said
42 cars saw you in Las Vegas. Vegas.
Right.
Walking out of the pink pony.
That girl was dressed like a hawker.
But, you know, Jesus. One of the, can we say asshole of the week? I think the asshole of the week is the University of Cal San Francisco.
Oh, yeah. Outsourcing
all the IT? Well, not, they just didn't outsource IT. 79 people in their IT department.
It's a small IT department for like a large public university.
Sure, yeah. Sure. But that's a good size IT department. It depends how many, you know. Right. But what happened was it said, okay, here comes a bunch of people you're going to train. And then, oh, by the way, they're all H-1Bs. And oh, by the way, they're your replacement. And oh, by the way, bye.
And by the way, you have to stay there and train them if you want to get your pension.
Right.
But I'll point out something else. Read about the article and go down to the part where it says, I think it's like 80% of them had a job within a week that paid as much as that. I thought was a really interesting thing because the demand for IT people is so high right now, as you guys might kind of know.
A little bit. We've heard it once or twice.
Yeah. This is a publicly funded university, so taxpayer dollars are basically going
to overseas.
Overseas.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. I don't agree with it. I'm just saying it is amazing that there's that much demand on IT.
So this is my question, right? So at the Detroit Policy Conference last week, they said there was a 6-to-1 ratio for skills to IT jobs right now. So 6-to-1 right ratio for people for IT jobs, right? So there's 6 jobs for every person.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay.
If that's the case and you're a university, why don't you train more people to make jobs, to go in these jobs? Like these things go together. You train people. You're a university.
There's a disconnect to universities. And I will point out –
because they're still teaching Pascal.
Well, and COBOL.
Well, sometimes it's obsolete.
The COBOL punch cards.
And there's a lack of interest. Like I'm going to call out my own stepdaughter a little bit. She is now – she does not want to sit in front of a computer even though she knows how much it pays. She knows how much I make doing IT work. And I'm like, you could have a job even where I work doing this and it pays this. And she's like, this is what I pay my employees. And she's like, well, I'd rather take this Harry Potter writing class. And I'm like, well, I love creativity and I love art. Don't get me wrong, but you do need to make a living and I need you to move
on. Tom, this is where you as a parent need to beat your child.
She's 21. Is it legal? Well, actually, it is legal. Actually, she's 21.
Or give it a few years.
We're taking this offline.
Give it a few years and the world will beat that out of her, right? When she realizes how much money she's making and struggling.
Or not making.
See, my strategy is to sell my house and get a smaller one. That's my you can't move back with me.
Checkmate.
So, I mean, if you make a decision, you have to own it, those kind of situations, right? Yes. So if you're going to be it's all about what the market's willing to pay you. I mean, that's just the reality of the world.
I'm really happy, though, real quick about this, is that there's legislation right now in the government to basically limit the dollar amount cutoff for H-1B visas.
Doubling it.
Exactly. Yeah. From like $67,000 to $125,000 a year.
I thought it was $130,000.
So it's something
it's like, way
which,
up there.
It's
yeah.
a very good wage, which I think is going to seriously curb the amount of H-1B visas that we have in the country if that goes through.
Well, that was what – God, we talked about this a year ago. I mean, there was – at one point in time, Snyder was asking them to basically relax the restrictions in the state of Michigan to give us –
I think that was 2 years
the
ago.
The entire pool – like there were like 55,000 visas available nationwide and Snyder wanted all the things. Yes. Like he wanted all 55,000 here.
And that's how we got the Secretary of State website. Oh.
Oh, wah, wah.
You guys ever used this shit? Anyway.
HP did it.
Case in point.
Yeah, I was there when it happened. So are we going to start taking side bets on when Uber goes away?
Uber's because, awful.
Because there's things coming out almost weekly now that are just damning. This latest one is
they're never gonna go away.
Uber Grayball.
People want to drink and not drive, and until the go home car, I'm drunk is there.
Or they're gonna
and
use
Uber has the mind share.
That is the next idea. Go home on drunk. That's like the name of the company.
Go home on drunk.
But I like it.
For those,
I'm gonna register every
totally no, for those that don't
for
know
what ghid.com.
For those that don't know what the Uber Grayball program was, it was basically short for a violation of terms and service to basically root out people they thought were targeting its service improperly.
Yeah. So they would go find people that were either working for city government or law enforcement and would effectively block those people from being able to summon Ubers.
They'd get an app. They'd put the app on the phone. They'd see fake cars driving around. And for some strange reason, a real one got there. The GM of the market would call the driver and say, cancel this ride right now.
Yep.
Even shadier, they would go into cell phone stores in these communities that block Uber, look at the cheapest model of burner phone and block those devices because government budgets, they would buy the cheap phones to use for this program.
And we're all grayballed.
Which actually would have the secondary effect.
That's better than us all being blueballed.
actual poor people. which, you know, that's another theme that came through is that there's a lot of people who feel like ride sharing, whether it's Uber, Lyft, whatever, just isn't – is like designed for them never to use, even though there's a huge need in a lot of communities for it.
So there was some – I mean, going real quick, we're coming down to the bottom of the hour, but some bad news came out. You know, there's some jobs coming back in the market and there's some jobs leaving. Just found out GM is getting rid of 1,100 jobs in the great state of Michigan, which we're not real happy about. But what I want to do is call out if you know any of these people, if you know that they're up for a possible career change. Dave Iannuri are launching the IT and the D Career Academy. It's going to be through the Michigan Economic Development Corp, Goodwill, the Chamber of Commerce. We're starting in Flint. And we're basically they got some grant money, and we're going to be retraining people to get in the wonderful world of information technology.
So all the times you've heard us talk about The Path, or you know, Bob's brother-in-law Chet, we've had this talk more than once. You know, it's a blog entry out on our site about we do. I mean, it started happening about two and a half years ago, where we started seeing more and more people coming to our events saying, "How do I get into IT?" You know, or "Hey, I just went through one of these coding classes. Now what?"
And I don't want to spend $15,000 on a boot camp.
Right?
What do I do
with companies that aren't downtown anymore? Yeah. So you know, we did. I mean, we wrote a blog post. And I said, "Hey, you know, this is the path. This is what you do and how you go, and this is how you go through it and what the scoop is." And we started talking to MEDC about this a good 14 months ago.
At least.
And it's, you know, finally coming to a fruition, which
they
is good.
They got their Pearson VUE certification.
Yep.
They got the grant money.
Well, because we've always, you know, we've had ever since, you know, we've always had, you know, IT and the D, the Career Academy link out on IT and the D, where for $29 a year, you know, you could go get access to, you know, at the time, I believe it was 1,100 classes.
Still.
That's, I thought it was up to 1,400 now.
You could be right.
Yeah. So, it was $29 a year, all you could eat. It was all the training materials. You know, you still had to go out and get the certs and that kind of stuff. So what's tweaked with this is that, well, now they've amped it up a bit. So there are 1,400 classes. You can even get an associate's degree through this thing because they do partner with an accredited university. And you can get a career change. And it's not just, you know, this grant and these classes aren't just covering getting you through the training materials. It's actually getting those certs for you as well.
And then not through that, we're partnering with MishWorks to get them placed. And if that doesn't work, we're partnering with all the recruiting companies we deal with here.
Yeah. Cause I mean, we do know several recruiting companies that do a lot of help desk staffing and that sort of thing. And that's where that first step is after you get those first three certs. So, it's been a long time coming and we're really, really geeked about it. I mean, this is one thing that, I mean, we're really dedicated and always have been about trying to make shit suck less out here. You know, in the area. I mean, we started the first pink slip party was back in 2009 because we had so many job seekers that were saying, dude, we can't get FaceTime with recruiters. We can't get emails. We can't get phone calls back, any of that stuff. So, I mean, we flex and we expand and, you know, do what we do when we get pulled into stuff. And this is an area that we pushed a little bit. I mean, we started pushing 14 months ago to get it going. But MEDC finally, you know, saw the need, agreed with the need. And so now we're getting pulled into it and we're getting pulled into it hard. So yeah, it's going to be a good thing.
And if you have any friends that don't want to take those classes, you can always send them a fart in a jar.
That's right. If they're bound and determined to be that last buggy whip manufacturer, you can send them a jart.
I sat and it's a jar fart, which I sat and pondered because it started. When did this whole thing start? Like there was the
glitter bomb,
the glitter bombs, the
glitter
bag
as
dicks.
A service. The bag of gummy dicks.
Glitter as a service.
Glitter as a service. That's how we build it.
Is that the huge dick sign? Like with the message you can put out?
That was the one we saw last week.
Shipadick.com.
Yeah, the Shipadick.
Yeah, Shipadick, right.
There was the giant chocolate wieners. So you could eat a dick.
There's poop.
There was, you could send zoodoo. You could send elephant shit to people. and now the latest is jart.
So not only can you pick your flavor, but you can put a friendly note inside this wonderful jar that they open and
So there's a sealed note in the jar. So they just all they know is that this mason jar looking thing shows up with what appears to be a very nicely written letter. And then they open it.
I want to start dropping them in Lake St. Clair, like just like hundreds.
There's enough bad bottle. Things being dumped in Lake St. Clair.
Nobody needs that.
I think that was one of the other stories that came out this week was that they found the illegal sewer hookup that was dumping, 200,000 gallons a year of raw
sewage.
Can't
swim at Metro Beach.
That explains a few things.
Hey, we're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with Tom Lawrence from Lawrence Systems. This is the IT and the D Show, and we'll be right back.
IT. Read. Meet. Listen. Networking Detroit, one beer at a time.
Hey, this is John Schneider from Nip/Tuck Smallville, the haves and the have-nots. Oh, Dr. Quinn, hot in Cleveland. Single Life of the American Teenager and just about everything you can possibly imagine. And oh yeah, the Dukes of Hazzard. You're listening to Bob and Dave. It's the IT in the D show.
ITinTheD.com.
Welcome back. Thank you for continuing to listen to us. This is segment two, episode 186 of the IT in the D show, broadcasting live here in Podcast Detroit in beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. Bob the sales guy.
You with us this week?
Or yeah. Hanging out with Dave the Geek. Will you eat? Nuri.
This week.
The FNG. Find us online. ITinTheD.com. Don't forget, mark your calendars. Check us out on the Meet tab. That's M-E-E-T. Follow us on the social and subscribe to us everywhere. Fine. Podcasts are sold.
Yep. So, hey, before we get rolling, this segment is brought to you by HostGator. From design and marketing services to intuitive website builders, HostGator has all the tools you need to build and host your website. Their drag-and-drop website builder and mobile-friendly templates make it easy to create a great-looking website fast. And HostGator's 24/7 expert support is always available to assist you via live chat or email anytime you have a question. Not to mention, since HostGator doesn't cap the amount or size of files you're able to transfer or upload, the opportunities are endless. You can create as many email addresses and forwards as you need. I think we have about 80 combined between IT and the D and Podcast Detroit for various purposes. Yeah. you can kick off your advertising with $100 worth of credits in Google AdWords and Yahoo Bing. But if somehow you decide that HostGator is not for you, not a problem. There's a 45-day money-back guarantee. So what are you waiting for? See what HostGator can do for your website. Go to HostGator.com/IT and the D. That's all one word to sign up today. And right now our listeners are going to get 60% off. That's 60, not 16, 60% off. Kind of cool. Just go to HostGator.com/IT and the D. And as always, guys, thanks for the support.
Speaking of Gators, we got Tom Lawrence in the house. You like that segue?
Welcome back.
I'm like, is he from Florida? Yes. Go to Florida.
I've been there before.
Have you had your head in alligator's
mouth? Does he have scaly skin?
He's been to Florida.
Maybe Photoshop.
Is he in Suicide Squad 2?
Oh,
no,
I want no affiliation with anything.
Tom Lawrence in the house. He is the owner of Lawrence Systems and also the host of the Sunday Morning Linux podcast right here on Podcast Detroit, where they get up.
Review.
Sunday Morning Linux Review. Yes. That they get up at 7 in the morning.
No, they get here at 7 in the morning.
So the only traffic on my street in the morning is my neighbor, Mary, pulling out of her house to come to this podcast.
Yes, our co-host lives by Nuri.
Right across the street. They're great neighbors.
Let's start there, and then let's get to your company.
Sure.
So hey, guys.
That was my first question.
Let's talk Linux.
You don't need an engineer, do you?
Yeah. Let's talk Linux, and you know when we should do it? 7 in the morning on Sunday. Like, walk me through that one.
Okay. There's no real logic behind it. Other than we did do some interviews with some people in England, and it works out great. We have a couple when we did a couple Linux reviews for distros, it turns out that's perfect prime time because they've already had their morning tea. They don't drink coffee over there, apparently. And they're awake and ready for a review. It's like 11 o'clock or something in England. So that has worked out for us. But other than that, it's actually this is the most convenient time. And Sunday Morning Linux Review is a good name. It wasn't SMLR.us wasn't taken.
It's a super awesome
is there any
domain.
Time where it just is like Sunday Morning Review is actually a live-on from Saturday Night's Review? And you just keep it going through till 7 in the morning.
That's Penguin Con.
Yes, Penguin Con. Yeah. And we do Penguin. We've done Penguin Con for 4 years, 5 years now, something like that. We do a show from Penguin Con, and we do it at 7 a.m., which is perfect because no one else is using equipment. Because now that we're a Podcast Detroit, no one is using equipment at 7 a.m. It turns out.
Nope.
No one is
conscious.
You had no problem finding an empty room or using the remote gear at 7 in the morning at all.
We're sleeping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tom, here's where I'm going to leave the gear for you.
Just crawling into bed.
That too. So, I mean, I thought your show's actually has some pretty huge traction. I was it's a great thing that you're getting as many listenerships, and you got taken notice. Are we allowed to talk about this?
Oh, yeah.
You got taken notice by one of the big boys, and you got invited to, I guess, talk about that.
Microsoft Build. So this scared me because we bash companies occasionally, and we're pro Linux and anti Microsoft. And
no,
yeah, and it turns out we get an email from Microsoft. We're like, oh boy, we have a cease and desist.
It's going to be a C&D.
It turns out they want to invite us to Microsoft Build Conference. They sent us a nice email, and they even made the comment, we listen to your show. We know you're not a fan. And then they go on to, they want to invite us to the Build Conference. They want to take all of us out there. We're still waiting on to work out some details with them. But we're kind of excited. They want us to do the show from the Build Conference and talk about the Azure services. They're even arranging interviews with the Azure Linux team to be on a show with us, which we thought was really awesome. And so we're going to do some in-depth with them. And so we also had, as we recently added another member a few episodes ago to our podcast. So when they messaged us, was listening to previous shows, we also said, hey, why not? Can we add this one other guy to there? So those are the details we're working
on.
Phil has been an awesome guest. He's a DevOps guy who develops all kinds of amazing cloud systems and Linuxy stuff and has a cool GitHub. So anyways, we're excited about that. That's going to be exciting broadcast from there. What's interesting is with the Linux podcast is you look at the numbers and go, okay, maybe it's not the biggest podcast, but I tell you, we have very, very passionate listeners because anyone who wants to listen to me take deep dives into torrent networks or solve riddles on Mr. Robot or do an entire distro review verbally cares a lot about Linux. So we have a very passionate audience with a lot of feedback.
Oh, yeah.
So they're very engaged with us. They send us a lot of interesting things. And, you know, it's a global audience too, which kind of blows my mind. We did realize we had to sort out one anomaly. I think we have 40% of our listeners are from Spain, what? According to the statistics. But it turns out that just happens to be the default PIA VPN. And because we've recommended PIA a couple times for a VPN service, that is the default where you endpoint by from a default signup. So we know a lot of them are also very security-minded people. Yep. So they all download our podcast out of anonymous IPs.
That's hysterical.
Dude, nuts.
It makes it kind of fun. Makes it kind of interesting.
Just make sure, bring the Podcast Detroit banner and lots of postcards.
There you go. We'll
grow up in you guys. All right. Fair enough. So, I mean, Lawrence Systems, right? I mean, we joke about it all the time because there's a couple guys that always name their company after their name, which is perfectly fine. With you, it's perfectly acceptable.
It's because I'm not clever.
that too.
Not in marketing.
Just kidding. No, but you built a nice little niche brand kind of in the – I would say downriver space, but kind of downriver space, doing things other people weren't doing. So I guess talk to us about what Lawrence Systems is doing.
So I actually love Dave. I think Dave's adjective was the woefully underserved small business IT market. I think that's what the quote from Dave. And we really see it as an option. So I actually came from corporate America back in 2002. I was a corporate IT manager for a GIT, Ford supplier, transportation market. Did really well in that market, and they had some financial issues, and I seized opportunity and started my own business, which, by the way, I was horrible at marketing. So we used to have Lawrence Tech written in my office, so I said, okay, I'll just call my company after my last name. That's not the greatest idea when it comes to branding, as it turns out. But I overcame that and learned some marketing. And basically, our right now we service.
Well, there's a university down the road.
It turns out there is. Which I had no thoughts of, to be honest with you. Like, oh, they have the same name as me. You know, that seems cool. Turns out there's a real weird association we have on that.
Fishburne. I mean, yeah, it goes on and on.
Yeah, there's the Lawrence Fishburne guy. He did the Matrix. That's kind of techy,
he did.
Right?
He did.
So anyways, we service about 450 businesses in the Downriver area. The way my clients, most of them look, have less than 20 workstations. But the Downriver market's also really, really strange for us because I literally have a client that's doing $32 million a year with 4 computers in her office. And in Oakland County, you go, what? How do you do that? Well, it's really easy. They have a 1-acre manufacturing facility running CNC machines that run tank parts. They build all kinds of government parts. They actually also have in the same facility, a company that builds these little press modules that go in like every automotive supplier's press across the board from GM to Chrysler to Ford. So they are doing high volumes of expensive parts that doesn't require, they literally run QuickBooks, but their QuickBooks invoice is like $50,000 a day in invoicing.
So when I worked for the Japanese trading company, which is a huge company, the entire Lexmark printer operation was ran by 4 computers, by 4 basically low-level secretarial and one boss that contracted manufacturing through Funai, ran global logistics and shipping for the entire Lexmark printer company.
Right. That's so our little niche market's been a lot of the MSP markets go, oh no, I only want to assume a client that has a minimum of 50 seats that I can bill for and things like that. They're really targeting those and they don't see the value in it. Well, these companies are willing, they understand they need support. They need that. They don't need the big bill. So we've kind of got some hybrid solution options that kind of, you know, mix a break fix and MSP where we monitor systems, provide all the antivirus and protections because they will click on anything because
it's like your grandfather basically, yeah, right?
Oh, it is. It is. They will. If the email title was "This will ruin your day," they may share it with a friend. So because they want to ruin their day too.
So you've been like, I don't know if I want to use this word or not, but wildly successful. You started with a very small shop. And now how many folks do you have total now?
Well, I still only have about 8 people plus contractors that we use. So we don't have an absolutely huge crew, but we have a very, very talented crew. I'm impressed with what we can
do. Well, and Marv. Yeah, Marv.
And we have Marvin. We have a Marvin. That's actually how we title him inside the building. We have a Marvin for that. It's like anything we don't want to do, we now delegate to him because paperwork has become so burdensome, like filling out bid sheets and things like that. Nobody wants to do it. It's all like a war of hot potato. So now we have a Marvin. And Marvin turns out, because he worked at Wayne State University for like 16 years, he loves paperwork. He was born in paperwork. He's
a bureaucrat. I think of like
he's a bureaucrat.
It's a show, Futurama,
Hermes. Yeah,
Marvin like these whips through spreadsheets and stuff. So we're filling out bid sheets. He's like, all right, this needs a 5% deposit for this. And I'm like, whatever, dude. Here's my credit card. You know, I don't care. Just, will it make me money? Run the numbers in your little spreadsheet and tell me if I make money at this thing. So then we can do the really techie thing we do. And then we started, of course. So you guys kind of know me from some of the videos I do on the projects, and you've seen some of the big projects.
They're phenomenal, by the way.
We have a lot of fun with that.
Speaking of wildly successful, right?
That's been doing really
so much that people try to copy it pretty regularly.
Yeah, apparently.
or just outright rip them. Yeah.
Copy, rip. Good news you wouldn't download a car, would you?
With dual monitors, I can copy and pasta real fast. and you can do one. YouTube added a feature to their copyright notice takedowns. When someone rips my entire channel, I can just copy paste every video really fast. Copy paste, copy paste, copy paste, and do an entire one claim form. It really made my day convenient. It still took me an hour, but, you know, I got it done.
It's probably a satisfying hour, right, sitting those?
Oh, yeah. Well, I sent a lot of profanity to the guy first in messages. I knew he wasn't going to respond, but it still felt good.
Hey, asshole.
So I vented it. Yeah, it's somewhere along those lines. So we do YouTube videos, and we put together – I like to do a lot of behind the scenes. We have a – we started doing a Thursday vlog since we hired Marvin because we did the first one on Thursday. So now we do all of them on Thursday. There's no other purpose to it than that.
Sort of like us. You know, we're Monday nights 9 to 11 because we were always Monday nights 9 to 11. It just kind of happened
exactly
that way. Yeah.
So you don't even need purpose for it. So we started putting videos together. And that's been a lot of fun. I kind of got a background in photography. Oddly enough, a few people know I was a wedding photographer for a while. I also studied videography. I did a couple of off-the-side things that was fun. So I just watched a million YouTube videos. That's literally how we learned videography and put a high production value in, investing some money in equipment. And that's how we do our YouTube videos and built our channel. We got a lot of subscribers, which oddly enough, we started a YouTube channel, but I was never asking, really pushing for an audience and asking to subscribe. We just kept posting videos. Now we're actually going, hey, you should like and subscribe, which turns out about 200 people a week are now subscribing in only a few months since we did that. So we went from less than 1,000 subscribers to 3,000, and we're at a gain rate of about 150 to 200 subscribers a week now. And it's rocketing right now because of the reviews. We've called out some big companies by tweeting. Turns out if you call out companies and tweet them, they will call you back out, and we can have fun debates about things. And that's been great.
Hey, Wendy's, your burgers are frozen.
Right. We're focusing on tech companies. Recently, another one reached out to me. They questioned my testing methodologies. So we made a video about how we do our testing methodologies so they could call me out again on it. And I said, prove I'm wrong, because they said their product was better than it was. And I said, well, no, I actually have like proof, and tell me how to test it to prove that you're right and I'm wrong. And that's what I said in the video. Because there's one thing like calling people out in video like that when everyone goes, well, you document it top to bottom, Tom. I want to see the rebuttal. And they didn't, you know, I love the reply I got from the engineering team at the company. They said, you misspelled our name. You were supposed to capitalize the third letter. That's, well, this is kind of a typo.
Come on.
Literally, that's what he said. And that was the only reply he had to my video.
Dude, that's like a Facebook argument right there.
Yeah.
That's exactly what that was.
I replied and said, thanks.
My name's not Jeff. It's Geoff.
Yeah. Right.
So how do you deal with things like YouTube comments and the like? Because YouTube comments are a special corner of the internet.
Oh, boy.
The most Isley Cantina.
The worst.
You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Yeah, some of them are deleted, and other ones I just kind of leave going, I can't reply to this. I did get a person who took a personal liking to me, and it started at SMLR, and he found my other videos, and they really need to know. They said they watched all my videos, and they need to know my issues, and this is a female, based on the name, person. Really need to know my issues on the female agenda for feminists and technology, and they had a whole rant they kept sending me. And I'm like, my agenda is to promote Linux. That's all I replied. And it went to another two paragraphs written back to me a second time, and then to the show, and then to my personal email. Like, this person's been commenting on YouTube videos. They would need to know my agenda on females in IT. And it all become, I mentioned that there was a female IT person called Valerie Aurora, and she did a cool thing about, she solved some problems in Linux. All they did was mention her. I didn't mention the fact that, yes, I know her. She has another agenda where she's a developer and she runs a part of the, not a girl coded, but something similar. There's a female like version of GitHub.
Well, I mean, there's people who just search constantly looking for things to send and get into that kind of stuff.
Right.
So she's
like,
keywords.
Because I mentioned her name, she thought I was like on this entire agenda. I'm like, no, Joe has her own agenda on things. I just kind of commented to her. She did something cool and she was a keynote address on a Linux topic where she solved a coding issue that is now implemented in the Linux kernel. Great. That's all I said in the video. And this person has gone and chased me around everywhere I am to try to get me to reply to my agenda. I'm just
good
like,
God.
So there's no dealing with the comments. My rules are generally, I won't reply more than three times to a crazy person. The third time, I'm crazy too. So
right.
Two replies. Yeah. It's I'm over it. I don't.
I try logic. I try rationalization,
and then
I'm out.
No, we have we have children that want YouTube channels. That's the one thing I say is I go, I don't think you could handle the comments.
Oh no,
like it's,
dude, your daughter bailed off Vine after her first bad comment.
Yeah, I know. She did. I told her she sucks, and she changed her name. Yeah.
No,
I know.
It's an issue. I've oddly, because I like nerd, I spend a lot of time on Reddit, maybe too much time on Reddit, and I've kind of hoard my kids, but I've had to deal with those comments too.
I do too, but I'm not telling you my username. Cause
I know nobody talks about your username on Reddit.
No,
don't do
nobody
it.
Nobody does.
Randy stalked me. He found me.
Do you know mine, Randy?
I don't.
Oh, shit.
Makes me sad.
Ah, so good.
Go further down the rabbit hole.
You'll mine's actually not too hard to find, but I'm not going to, I'm still going to make you work for it. I'm not going to say it.
So how do we find you online? How do we find you on YouTube? How do we listen to your podcast?
SMLR.us is the podcast, where you can find it where all great podcasts are, podcastdetroit.com.
Wow.
Exactly.
You have a future in this.
I have a future in this. Maybe I can be a podcaster. www.lawrence, L-A-W-R-E-N-C-E. Very similar to a school around here. LawrenceSystems.com. You can find me. If you Google Thomas Lawrence, unfortunately, Sir Thomas Lawrence, although he's been dead, has a better SEO position than me.
No, you can call Lawrence Systems where you can buy Lawrence Tech.
But if you call, you type like, in Thomas SEO, Lawrence Systems, you will definitely find me. I'm not too hard of a guy to get a hold of. I'm very social. I accept most all friend requests except for from beautiful women because it's never real.
When somebody sends you like a friend request, it's like them in a bikini and they're like supermodel looking. Yeah, probably.
I right click Google image search and prove it's fake in about 2 seconds.
Uh-huh. You know, and then the girl's at home going, why doesn't anybody like me? Like, yeah, I know, right?
It's the Java developer we had at the Blackfin event 5 years ago. Yeah.
Dude, Tom, this is a beautiful website, dude. Serious.
Oh,
this
you,
is really, really good.
I got my favorite comment that I wasn't sure how to take the other day. The guy went through our menu system, talked to my employees, got a job set up. Then he went through and found me and says, dude, I just want to let you know. I'm like, what? And I'm like, a weird conversation is how it started out. And he's like, I went to your website. It's cool. And I seen your phone number. And I'm like, okay.
What?
Thanks, bro.
Usually you go to websites that look cool, but no idea what a damn phone number is and no idea what they do. They just have a cool website that I come fascinated with and can't figure out why I was there. We actually put our phone number at the top, call to action. And if you view it on mobile, we put these automatic call and map buttons on the bottom that show up as overlays when the screen resolution goes down to a certain resolution. So literally, because you went on your mobile, you probably went to call us. So we have a button you can press that calls us.
What a novel concept.
Wow.
It is. Well, because we do website design and things like that. And we really work with workflow. My web developer is very talented. We talk about like what you come to the website for because some people just want it to look cool. Oh, you've seen them all.
I just totally figured it out by like minimizing my window. And I'm
if you minimize your window, it does it too. And go to the different blog posts. But check us out every Thursday. We had a blog on our all the stuff goes back in my LawrenceSystems.com/blog or goes on my YouTube channel. We cross post everything between all the social media places that we can post this at.
Phenomenal.
Very cool.
Tom, appreciate the time. Good luck in Seattle.
Well, of course, Sunday mornings.
Well,
it's 7 a.m.
I'll catch that on the podcast.
And, yeah. The magical podcast that you listen to it when you wake up later after 7
I will do that.
Syndication
is a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm. But hey, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with Stephanie, writer and podcaster extraordinaire. This is the IT in the D show, and we'll be right back.
IT in the D. Read, meet, listen. Networking Detroit, one beer at a time.
Hi, I'm Brittany Daniel from The Game, and you're listening to IT in the D show.
ITinTheD.com.
Welcome back. Thank you for listening. This is segment 3, episode 186 of the IT in the D show, often imitated, never duplicated. We are hanging out
here.
Unlike
Tom's YouTube channel.
Exactly. I'm sure people are, nobody wants to steal our content. This is actually good. We're hanging out here in Studio One Podcast Detroit in beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. This is Bob the Sales Guy hanging out with Dave the Geek, Nuri the FNG. We did get a couple good submissions on Twitter for your title. Find us online, itinthed.com, and do us a favor. Everyone knows that the worst part of my day is putting on socks. But hey, there's two guys 4 years ago. They learned that socks are like actually the most requested items at homeless shelters. If you've ever seen videos and stuff, it's actually very true. They also realized there's a huge gap in the market for a good sock. So they quit their jobs to make a difference. Got them jealous. And after spending 2 years engineering the perfect sock, Bombas was born. They offer premium, thoughtfully crafted socks that are substantially better than the ordinary sock in 7 different ways. They're such game changers. Customers claim they're the most comfortable socks they've ever worn. I ordered mine. I'm still waiting for them. They should be here any day now. I will definitely report back. For every pair of socks Bombas sells, they donate a pair to someone in need. They've already donated 2 million pairs of socks, proving even something small can make a huge difference. I think it is too. So do us a favor. Start making a difference in your comfort and someone else's. Go to bombas.com, bombas.com/IT to get 20% off your first order. You'll love them or money back. That's bombas.com/IT. I did have to enter IT at the coupon code to get it at checkout. So just be cognizant of that. But yeah, bombas.com. Appreciate the support.
Not Boombas that you're very familiar with.
No, I drank a lot of Boombas. that's going to be weird. I'm going to drink a Boomba while wearing Bombas.
Yeah.
In Bahamas.
Oh, you listen to La Bamba.
In the Bahamas?
In the Bahamas.
Wow.
Let's make that happen.
Oh, you're getting bombs.
This sounds amazing, actually.
Yeah, exactly. So,
all right. So, hey, coming up this segment, we are yakking with Stephanie Menard. She's a writer. She is a publisher. She is a podcaster.
And you can't save big money with her.
You cannot save big money with this Menard. No.
Sorry.
start a coupon thing and just say it's my name. Kind of like Mike Rowe that made Mike Rowe Soft, R-O-W-E.
That was so badass.
Save big money with Stephanie Menard's. Like, that should be like a thing.
We'll see.
All right, fine. Never mind. I retract that statement.
Well, so we ran into you first at Fantasticon a year and a half ago. So since then, you've had one book come out. So what's issue two? Well, I guess let's start with the foundation. What is the series about?
Well, it's entitled Psychopath.
Yep.
So, I mean,
so
do I really? I don't have to explain too much. The series investigates what it takes for people to kind of go off the edge and do something kind of crazy.
Some days, not much.
Yeah, I know. After the last couple weeks I've had, I'm like pretty much going to have to write the next one about myself. So I'm a psychology major. Well, I have a degree.
Yeah.
And I've always been fascinated by what makes a person do what they do. So I love horror. Been obsessed since I was a little kid. And I've always written. And it just seemed like the next logical step for me.
So issue one focused on what, and then what's the bridge into two? That's coming out Friday, I believe.
The good thing about this series, it's a limited series. There's only 3 issues that are going to come out under the umbrella of Psychopath, and they could stand alone, but there is a tie through all of them. The first issue is about a young boy named Zach who goes through some kind of unbelievable things that turn him into somebody who does some bad things.
A psychopath.
And issue 2, which will be coming out this Friday, March 10th, which I'm super excited about, just in time for Fantasticon Toledo.
Right.
is a continuation of it's another story. And it does kind of discuss toward the end a little bit about Zach, but it's about Nathan, and it kind of is, he's got like a so totally normal life and everything's great, but he has something that's stalking him in his dreams. So he has to kind of figure out what's going on before it affects his everyday normal life. So. Okay. That's the premise.
So, and you're the writer. And so, like, we always try to figure out, okay, so what's the tech thread? Like, you wind up dealing with a lot of, like, I mean, you write it. You don't do, you know, the inking or the coloring or any of that kind of stuff. So you wind up working with a lot of people remotely. What's the biggest pain with that?
Oh, you don't do the art? Bye.
Other than the people at cons. Oh, you're just the writer?
Tracer.
Well, it's a joy to be a writer. But when you're a comic book artist and you do it independently, you have to pay everybody who works on your book. So unless you kickstart it or, you know, do something of that nature, I don't do any of that because I am still trying to build my repertoire before I go forth and try to seek assistance from other people. Okay. So I pay for everything out of my pocket, and that, you know, it's kind of rough sometimes.
It's ups and downs. Yeah, we're familiar.
But it's worth it. I have full control over everything that comes out under Scapegoat Press, which is my publishing company. So it's kind of a good thing. I like to have control.
No.
I do. It's kind of a thing.
So, but not only that, so you've also got, you're floating around two, if not more, shows on the network at any given point in time. So you've got The Way Station, which is the one you do with Megan, and then Shot of History.
Yes.
So, and so I guess tell people a little bit about those.
Well, I'll start off.
Because there's a book there too.
Yeah. Shot of History is, a show that I do with, Trico and Devin. And it's kind of like drunk history, but it's better than drunk history because I feel like that is so over the top. And okay, maybe one or two of our episodes are a little over the top.
A little bit.
That's because we've had way too much to drink.
Usually by the fourth or fifth, because you guys come in and burst record. So usually by the fourth or fifth episode you're recording, it's gotten a little
deep. The first three are like golden and they're funny and they're, you know, really topical and there's so much knowledge there. And then like the fourth or fifth one is just like, we just start swearing and talking about dicks. I mean, that's kind of what happens.
We're all good. There's a lot of historical context. Yeah. There's been a lot of dicks in history.
Sounds like I should start listening.
Have you seen actual carvings from the Romans? It's a lot of dicks.
Exactly. Yeah. So I feel like it's kind of organic that
Richards and private eyes, you know, I mean, I get it, right? There's just a lot of detectives in the court over the course of history.
Right. A lot of private Dixie. Right.
We did write a book, Shot of History, Wild Turkey, that goes over some of the more eccentric people in history. It just came out, what was it? I think February. And that.
Yeah, because you got it right in time for the Clash of Ages Con.
Yep. So that'll be with me this weekend at Fantasticon Toledo. Super excited about it. It was a lot of fun to write. And then I do The Way Station with Megan, and we kind of focus on like independent creators, mostly comic book writers, but, we have done like, you know, independent film creators and, you know, people who just create independently pretty much anything, art, whatever. And, it's a lot of fun. We do 2 hours every other Saturday here, and as you well know, the show we just did, sometimes
gets a little off the rails.
It does get a little off the rails, depending on.
Well, I think you both had crappy weeks.
Yeah. When we have a bad week, that's what happens. Yeah. Just listen to the last episode, podcastdetroit.com.
The first hour was a little rough.
Never bring work into the podcast. You know the rules.
Quit talking about cloud.
Isn't that what you do?
No, never.
Quit talking about cloud.
Bad for you. So, I mean, the con circuit, it's amazing. It's exhausting. It's party. It's everything in between. I mean, walk me through. Because, I mean, me and Dave can be off in the morning, like at cons, because we're just podcasting. Nobody really cares. You have to be on because it's A, it's your livelihood. B, like it's your brand. I guess walking me through what that's
case
like.
In point, Saturday morning, Great Lakes Comic Con.
Yeah.
We can absolutely be off.
I'm on time. Dave's 2 hours late. So if you're late, bring coffee and hot dogs.
You were there like 20 minutes before me. Don't
As far
even.
As you know, I was on time.
Other than the text you sent me that said, oh, thank God I beat you here. Where are you?
Shit.
Amazing.
Well, I don't do very well talking with people anyway, so there really is no thing like walking you through my convention day is like me trying to talk to people without being super awkward.
So what's the dumbest thing someone said to you? I want to know.
So what is this book about?
Like, I know that's dumb, but I mean, you know.
Well, I mean, everybody asks you that because they go up to you and they just look at what you have on your table and then they don't really want to know. They just kind of are bored and they want to talk to somebody.
Especially when they check out cashier, ask how your day is going. They don't really care.
No, as long as you're not, really as long as you're not that guy at the, remember the Gibraltar one? It was like, hello, do you like books about magic and alligators? Would you care to purchase?
Oh,
and he would like talk to you for like, he would talk to you for like 6 solid minutes. And he goes, would you like to buy my book? It's $20. We're like, oh my God, get me away from this guy.
Slowly back away.
Oh yeah, no, you couldn't get away. It was like weird, like you couldn't get away from him. It was
that intense scare.
It was
tractor beam eyes. Oh, yeah,
yeah. I don't know if there was like a pentagram on the floor that would lock people in, or yeah,
there might have been.
It's entirely possible. It's a con after all.
But yeah, you always have to be on and like want to talk about your book. And if you're not excited about it and you don't believe in it, then you're never going to sell it.
We see too many artists and authors. Like when you walk by, they're picking their nails. They're drawing, they're reading. It's rare that you get some that have their eyes up and are like, hi, like smiling. It's just like, you know, why are you there? Like, you know what I mean? You're always good. There's a few people that are always good, but there's a bunch that just have their heads down.
Well, we always talk about that in Artist Alley, especially where, you know, people usually have, I mean, the vast majority of them have their heads down drawing and don't pay attention to anybody walking by or anything like that.
You're not
going to sell anything.
Here's a note to Artist Alley. I'm not buying it because it's cool. If it's way cool, I'm buying it. If it's medium cool, I'm buying it for the connection. I'm buying it for the story. I'm buying it because maybe you were cool.
Yeah.
Or maybe we chatted about something, right? I don't think they get that. And there's some amazing art and there's some medium art. There's medium art I like even better sometimes.
Yeah.
But if I got no connection, I don't, what do I want it for?
Wasn't it all about the story in a lot of ways, right?
Totally.
So you get a piece of art. And there's a memory and things associated with it and all that other kind of stuff.
And you
stuff.
Can tell the story.
Exactly.
Hey, this was someone I met at so-and-so thing, and this was the story behind it, and it's pretty cool. You know, yeah, if you don't have that story, well, it's cool. Godzilla King Kong mashup print there you got. Yeah. Bought it at Gibraltar Trade Center. Yeah. You know, there's not, you know what I mean? It's two different stories.
It's another Daredevil print.
Right.
It's another X-Men print.
So I think a lot of people maybe don't know. I mean, this audience might, right? But a lot of people might not know, like, just how big of a deal these cons and things are. So, like, for a little bit more of the casual person like myself, who I like comic books, I like nerdery things, but, like, I've never been to those kind of things. Like, what kind of culture are we talking about here?
If it's nerdy, it's there. And you get you get a whole, like, spectrum of nerd. You get like your super antisocial, awkward nerds, and you get your super smart, talkative, super intelligent nerds. I love them all. I'm one of the awkward ones, so I can totally relate. But I do bathe, which I'm not gonna lie.
It's a plus.
Thank you. I know. Thank you.
In this 12x14 studio, thank you.
Right.
I've had some bad experiences. That's why I said I bathe.
I've run cons before. I get it.
Yeah. Conventions are super important, especially for independent creators, because a lot of us don't have a website or have any other way of selling their product. And for a lot of us, it's connecting with our fans that will sell our books.
It's connection. Making
exactly what Bob was saying. When I did my first convention, with my own stuff back, it was last May. It was, Cherry Capital Comic Con, which is up in Traverse City. It's such a beautiful con, and I'm going back this year, and I'm super excited. I sold the crap out of my book because it was my first book. I was super excited, and there was just like a lot of energy, you know, and people were excited to, I don't know, maybe see something different. So I don't know. Conventions are just super important for people like myself. I have a website, but I don't have a store yet because I have somebody working on it who – You know how that goes.
On it.
Well, yeah, it's like always working on it. It's partially my own fault. I should kind of stay on top of this person, but I'm not doing that because, you know, I have a job.
Because of a job.
Yeah.
Well, and there's a wide variety of cons. I mean, like you look at, you know, like Fantasticon Mount Clemens is not the same as Motor City Comic Con,
right.
is not the same as San Diego Comic Con.
No.
You know,
there are levels. It's like you have your like little local ones that they do at churches where maybe you get like a couple hundred people. Then at Fantasticon, you get maybe a couple thousand people. Motor City gets just.
I think it's like 60,000 people on Saturday was last
year.
It's
insane. And then you go to San Diego and that's just like, that is the crown jewel of conventions. It is insane. And I know a lot of the creators, last year were kind of boycotting it and they were posting up at like bars and then like posting on their Facebooks that they were like,
we talked about that.
Yeah. Not getting tables. Meet me at this bar. You can come meet me and we can talk about my book. And they were doing like the more personal. They didn't want to spend the money to get the tables and it's expensive. So, I mean, it really just depends on what level of creator you are. I am not a San Diego Comic-Con person. I'm more like a Fantastic-Con person and I'm so good with that. I'm proud to be.
Well, it seems like there are a lot of people. I mean, I've seen things like the Motor City Comic-Con, all the YumaCon. Obviously, it's the most most visible, right? That's one that you notice because everybody's dressed differently.
Mm-hmm.
But what are ways that the region could encourage this community and be something where it's like, oh, we come to Detroit for these things?
Well, unfortunately, right now, the market for conventions is
so super
oversaturated. And I'm saying this as somebody who likes to go to conventions. I'm not saying this as an artist right now. This is me just speaking my mind. There are way too many, and I think that it's causing attendance to be lowered at some of the bigger ones because they're just all over the place. And I think what they need to do is focus on quality over quantity. Motor City is a wonderful show. People come from all over the country, actually all over the world, to be at Motor City Comic Con. I think it's one of the greatest mid to higher level conventions. Granted, it is crowded as shit.
Well, and some people give it flack. Well, and some people give it flack because it's gotten away from being, it's not as much a Comic Con. You know, some people will call it a nerd mall. It's a flea market. It's a,
well, there's a lot of celebrities.
Yeah, it's more pop culture now. Yeah. But San Diego is no different.
Right.
I just want to know how those went. We talk about this ad nauseum, but how they went from, you know, taking out $100 at the ATM and getting five autographs to spending $385 for like a family portrait with like The Walking Dead. How did it get there? Did they just raise the joke? Like, hey, let's make it $300. Oh my God, there's
people bought
sold out.
It. Yeah.
Let's do it again. What? Like it's nuts what the money that is being thrown around at those events.
Well, it's like I love biking, but I don't understand how people are spending buying all these $2,500 bicycles. Like who buys a $2,500? I mean, it seems to be going across all of course he does. But that seems to be coming across all kinds of industries, all kinds of things. This move towards like super luxe or super cheap and the middle is just gone.
I like middle.
Well, speaking of the sizes, do you get treated differently?
Giggity.
Do you get treated differently at a large con versus a small con, like by the organizers, by the attendees? How does your experience differ as an independent artist?
In my experience, I've been treated very well. By the people who put them on. Every single one I've been to, everybody's been really great and super helpful. And, I've been able to meet some really great creators that I never thought that I'd get to meet. I've been tabled next to them and not even known until I looked over like, holy crap. Right. So, I don't really know. Like in my experience, there has been really no difference. The only thing that you're going to get out of a bigger con is you're going to get more sales because you have more foot traffic. So somewhere like Motor City, you're going to make way more money than you're going to make at, you know, one of the smaller ones that like might be at a church or at like a flea market or something like that.
But it's the trade-off. I mean, you also have the higher startup cost.
Exactly.
The
yeah. You pay more for your table and all that stuff. But I mean, it really depends on, you know, how you want to market yourself and where you want to put your stuff out at. You can stay local. You can go, you know, anywhere in the country. You just if you have the money, then, you know, do it.
It's got to be pretty hard, too. You work in like, what, 12-hour days, no breaks? How does that work?
Oh, my God.
There's no breaks.
Conventions are so tiring.
But then you have to go out afterwards.
Yeah.
There's an expectation to party with the peer group. There's absolutely, you can't not out.
But there are, like, you can show up for like an hour and leave and nobody's going to be judgmental.
No,
like,
but you have to show up.
Yeah, it's good to show up just to, you know, support each other.
I don't think that's the expectation of us anymore. We can't just show up for an hour and leave. That's that people.
Yeah.
People would
ask I've never
wrong.
Seen you show up for an hour and leave anywhere. And if you do, that event sucks.
Actually, I can think of one where we showed up for an hour and left.
Oh, but, yes. We were all there.
We were all there.
Oh, true.
And that one with the fancy people.
With the knobs.
Right.
With the knobs. With the knobs. Fancy people.
Should have left sooner.
We
should.
We didn't even get fed, did we?
No. No. We had two drinks.
Jeez. Stephanie, how do we find you online?
You can find me at stephaniemenard.com. And
M-A-N-A-R-D.
M-A-N-A-R-D.
And you spell your first name weird, too.
Yeah, it's S-T-E-F-A-N-I.
Okay.
It's not really weird. It's just...
Different.
It's thank you. I'm also on Facebook, facebook.com/Stephanie Menard. I'm on Twitter, and I'm on Instagram under pretty much the same name.
All the places, all the things. Well, and you'll be at Fantasticon this
weekend. I will be at Fantasticon this weekend with...
We'll be there.
Podcast Detroit. Well, I'll have my own table, but yeah. I will be there with you guys in spirit.
Yeah.
I'll wave from my booth to you guys.
And we'll get Nerf guns.
You usually have candy, so I'll probably come over and get some candy.
True. It's our lure.
Yeah, we always.
It works.
Exactly. So, hey, that's thank right,
the,
you.
The every con. You know you want nerds in your mouth here.
Oh.
Yeah. What is this nerds?
What is these nerds?
Hey, we are up against a break. We're going to take a quick one, and we're going to be back with Jeremiah, Dr. Hook. From DailyDetroit.com, this is the IT in the D show, and we'll be right back.
IT in the D. Read, meet, listen. Networking Detroit, one beer at a time.
Hey guys, it's Timog, Bruce Leroy from The Last Dragon. You're listening to the IT in the D show.
ITinTheD.com.
Welcome back. Are we still doing this? This is segment 4, episode 186.
Segment 4 is turning into segment 5 with
it's
us. It really is.
Taking a turn for the worst. Where is this the IT in the D show still?
Still.
We are hanging out in Podcast Detroit in beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. Bob the sales guy, Dave the geek, Nuri the FNG. Just go to itinthed.com and then you can find everything.
Yeah. All the things are there.
Right.
So we are rolling this segment with Jer from Daily Detroit, Jeremiah. And so we've had a couple of people ask, like, dude, why is Jeremiah? Well, we two questions. Why is Jeremiah always on the show? And what's with the Dr. Hook thing? Well, we're not segment 5. Someday we'll explain the Dr. Hook story.
No.
But so some of you who have been around for a while will remember back in the day, what, 3-4 years ago?
Five
years ago now?
Yeah.
CBS Detroit ran an online poll.
That was 2011. That was 6 years ago.
Six years ago. Yep.
Oh, my God. We're old.
We're so old.
Yeah. CBS Detroit ran an online poll for, was it best online?
Best blog in Detroit.
Yes. Best blog in Detroit. Go figure. It was an online poll. And the group of nerds somehow won.
They haven't done that since. Has CBS done that since?
No, they have not. Right. They did it once and then they ran away. And then so laughably, when they announced the results, we won the popular vote. But then apparently, the Electoral College stepped in and the editor's choice went to something called Detroit Unspun.
Bodie McBoaterface.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Totally. They totally Bodie McBoaterface.
Screw your ass. That's what we said.
And so they're like, oh, who the hell are those guys? And screw those guys. I wound up at Augie's one night, over in Madison Heights with a couple of friends.
Augie Ben Doggies,
yes, 4Q2. And I'm out on the porch having a cigarette and run into a friend of mine, Chris Hipke. And she's like, yeah, she's like, I really want you to meet this guy that she's sitting next to, Jeremiah. And I'm like, oh, hey, what's up, man? What do you do? And he like had this look on his face. He's like, Detroit Unspun. I was like, oh. You're the guy.
And I thought in my head, you're the guy.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I'm like, I'm Dave with IT. Then he's like, I know.
It's my job to know things.
Well, actually, I think at that time we were still DetroitNet.
Yes, DetroitNet. Yeah. Yep.
Yes, I know. So, yeah, we got to yakking and talking and had a good laugh about the whole thing. And that's how Jer kind of came into the circle.
Yes.
Of all the fun things. And then you moved on from that and started Daily Detroit.
Yes. And years later, and the circle is complete, starting this week, Detroit Unspun and some of its writers are going to fold underneath Daily Detroit.
Nice.
And so it comes all full circle. Both Marge and Maura Sorge, Maura Campbell, consider them mentors, consider them people that I learned a lot from. I mean, we won editor's choice. I mean, I'll take an electoral college victory and get your presidency, right? So the archives are actually, we've been hosting them pro bono for a few years. All the archives are going to go in, although 8 years plus of archives are going to go into Daily Detroit. We're going to continue some of the writers. Some of the writers are working on other projects, the post is going up, but, Karen Dibas is working on her book, about the witches of Del Rey, which is super cool.
Okay.
And she's a great writer. She actually just recently finished a book about the history of potato chips in Detroit, which is this whole Sicilian immigrant thing and all this other stuff. It's really great. And a bunch of the writers, some of the writers actually who were with us when we did Detroit Unspun are now doing Daily Detroit. And then I'm able to make Daily Detroit kind of like my main gig now.
Right.
Which is really cool. So,
you make us all jealous and proud. That you get to say like, no, because
it's we like got the falling down guys.
Yeah.
We love you and hate you.
Yeah. You got to quit your gig and start a brewery. Awesome assholes.
Well, it's funny you should mention that because a lot of what some people have wondered over the years, like, well, why does Detroit need this or whatever? And I really look at it as in some ways, it's kind of like we're a craft beer outlet of media, if you will. Yeah. You know, we're not going to try to be, we never first. Have tried to be first, never have tried to be. You know, the free press or whatever. We add commentary. We add information. We fill in the gaps.
And you don't have to be.
No.
Right? Look at the burger choices we have in town. You know, right? It doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, that's the whole thing, right? People have different ways that they engage with the region. And those jobs, why do something that everybody else is doing really well already? And why chase after, frankly, I mean, all those folks, those business models are in real trouble. You see cut after cut after cut.
Yep.
And I don't find fun rewriting other people's stuff. I'd rather just share their links because they did the work. So there's no point to me in rewriting stuff just to drag people through my thing. That's dumb.
But to you me, get the
click. Spend the time on original and interesting stories.
But you get the clicks, Cher.
All the clicks.
We like the clicks.
You know what I found doing this after a while? Yeah. Is that you can do it the right way and people will still come.
No. And it works like that?
Well, where's the.
Yeah. It's that
same thing. I walked right into that one.
A few inside jokes. We're taking pot shots at a few other blogs in town that aren't.
Well, and so.
We're all about the clicks.
Well, exactly. And I mean, I'm fine with that. Everyone needs traffic. That's all whatever. But it's all about pushing conversation forward. And there's lots of people already do that stuff. So why do that? For us, it's about adding just more dimension to things. Another thing we'll be doing is this with the podcast Detroit Network. Mm-hmm. As you know, we've already launched our daily Detroit Happy Hour podcast, yep. where we explore Detroit one interesting person at a time. And then I will be kicking off next week.
You took our catchphrase and you changed it. Networking Detroit one beer at a time when he's like interesting.
I'm part people. Of the family, man.
Ah, fine. Come here, give me a hug. Aww. No, not literally.
Yeah. That's after the show.
I have to get through Tom to get a
right. Right.
I'd hug Tom too. But we'll be doing a daily podcast because that's another thing. So much as you guys have sort of proven in a lot of ways, all of these things where people are like, "Well, I'm going to do my thing and I'm just going to try this or whatever." Dive in, mm-hmm. go all the way. And so doing a daily podcast, I think is the right move. We already create a lot of stuff. We're already recording interviews with people. We're out doing stories, all these other things. So like, let's turn it into something, into a medium that really makes sense. You know,
what makes sense is the people that can't necessarily sit down and read all your stories, but you give them a 20-minute digestible so they can listen in their car.
Right.
And they get that too lazy, can't read, or too lazy, didn't read, or just can't read.
Or sitting there in the Uber, or sitting there on the bus, or sitting there at the desk.
I want to consume it in my way. So just give them another way to consume it.
Exactly. Reach people where they're at. You cannot expect to drag everybody to where you are. You've got to go to them.
Mm-hmm.
And consumption has changed. Digital has changed the world, and a lot of media outlets, I'm not just talking about Detroit, I'm thinking in general, haven't caught up to that. And we're just like, all right, this is, we provide things and we're just going to be where people want the things. It's that simple.
Smart. It's the same. That's the same way we look at like syndication. You know, the running joke is everywhere fine podcasts are sold, but we throw things, you know, everywhere that'll take an RSS because it may not be a service that we use. But you know, like we had, Mike Dennis. You know, we keep, he threw our RSS feed in the Zune store back in the day. yay. But hey, we got like four or five more listeners, you know, that were catching us on Zoom.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, they're, you know, but they were listeners we didn't. So I mean, it, you know,
no, but like Pocket Cast and Podcast Addict, those are things that we don't use, but I know people use them.
Yeah, so we throw the RSSs there. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, and I think one of the things is that people just love their cars in this town. People are doing commutes, things like that. And so that's where you're going to be. I don't want you reading the site while you're driving your car. That'd be a bad idea.
Well, and it's getting, you know, I had this conversation with a lot of people, you know, that just the that whole shifting face of the medium. You know, terrestrial radio had that key advantage of a radio built into the car and people could listen. You know, a couple of years ago, you started being able to do like, my car's a year old. I can Bluetooth, to my car. Life's good. I listen to podcasts, you know, through the app or whatever all the time. Now as more and more cars are coming out built on, you know, the Android platform or built, you know, with Apple Play, you know, in the cars, you've got that and being built in with Wi-Fi, you know, you've got that built in capability of doing podcasts right in the car. That kicks things up to a whole nother level that that's going to be the next shift in this game is that reach into the automotive world.
Absolutely. And if you're not jumping full into it, you're going to miss it. And the time to do it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing too is to understand that a podcast is different than say a radio broadcast. It's a different thing. This isn't the same as yakking on 97.1 or whatever. It's got a
hey, it's time for weather and traffic on the twos. No, it's no, not.
Jim,
it's
that's not going to work.
Jim, the biggest miss going on right now is getting corporate America getting away from the recorded WebEx
or even just the live WebEx.
Or getting no, but they're recorded afterwards. They send a link out like, hey, if you can't make the live one, we can send you this link. No one's watching it, but I'll be damned if I wouldn't want to put it on my car and listen to it on the ride to work, right? Yep. Like it's just a huge untapped market in terms of training, getting out their news. Like I'm talking big corporate America, the ones that like, you know, it's a huge deal. Like, hey, we are the right to work. You know,
well, we tried to do the moving company that still sends CDs out to every single one of their drivers. Yep. And that's one of the conversations we're having is, all right, well, let's fix that.
Well, and that's the thing is that media is moving from a few mass outlets to a lot of outlets. And the thing is that Snapchat, Facebook, Instagram are now the NBC, ABC, CBS, right, et cetera. And so you have to design your content not as a network, but as a show and as a piece of something greater. So
are we ham radio? I want to be ham radio.
Do we get call signs?
I want to be pump up the volume.
Oh.
Well, podcasting gives you the unmediated access to the creator itself. You're seeing your vision uninterfered by, so to speak, corporatism that you see. I see the vision of Daily Detroit from you. I see this show from Dave and Bob putting it together, not through a series of corporate sponsorships and publishers and a series of people. Oh, no, cut this out. Oh,
well, Tom, the best compliment Dave and I ever get.
You've been there. You've been on for 6 minutes. It's time for the jazz music to play. The headphones. Yeah.
The best compliment Dave and I ever get is when they read our stuff. See. Something else, but when they ever read our stuff and say, you know, I can hear you saying this.
Yeah.
Like, thank you. That, like, to me, that even if my content sucks, to me, that's a compliment. like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I didn't agree with a friggin' word of it, but I could hear it in your voice.
Totally. No, it's me.
Consistently bad.
You're consistently bad. And I want to hear more of it.
Good. No, I'd rather it be me than, you know what I mean?
No, anyway. I think there's so much of that. It's more personal. It's me. Me in person is the same as me on the microphone, is me in the YouTube channel, looking around with stuff. Yep. And you guys too. I mean, I know you guys in person and I hear your podcast. It's that same thing and same here with Daily Detroit. It's you. It's not some filtered.
Well, and it's also the other people, but all of them too.
Yeah,
it's
all
unfiltered.
Them too. It's unfiltered.
Right. It's something where this is an actual thing that's happening. And that's that when you talk about trust in the media, this is the part that I think a lot of folks, it's not about politics left or right. This is the part that I think a lot of traditional media folks don't get is exactly what you just said. And when you talk about lack of trust in the media, that's what the big companies are missing is that they can't get that gap. Like just you said, like it's like it, you know, Bob and Dave, you know, me, you know, all these things. You can't recreate that in a mass media context.
You could,
but it would take a rethink.
Well, no, I mean, dude, Walter Cronkite, Dan Rather. I mean, back in the day, those were the guys that, I mean, if something came out of their
Bill
mouth.
Bill Bonds, Mort Krim, you felt you knew them.
Well, and it was known and trusted, and you took that at face value, and it was, you know, they carried weight.
Like, growing up in this town, Ernie Harwell was your uncle.
Was that because there were limited choices, or was that because of them particularly? I think it's because of them particularly.
Both. Ernie Harwell was able to gain access and understanding that the media is like, let Ernie go. The guy's a genius. People listen to him. Mm-hmm. Don't filter the guy. Ernie knows how to tell a ball game.
Well, and you know, the other side of that spectrum where you've got, you know, Joe Buck that everybody, you know, every media outlet keeps trying to cram down people. So I don't think a game that he is on doesn't fill my Facebook feed with people bitching about Joe Buck.
I think that's just become fashionable. He's fine. Everyone just wants to hating is the new liking.
it's so true.
It's one of those anyone that puts themselves out, like, it's kind of like Tom puts a video out, then he gets three people going, "You're an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, your stuff's stupid."
Many more.
Like, it's the guy sitting in the basement with the fedora going, "Stupid."
Well, but I mean, where I was going with that though, I mean, it had to do some with them, and it did have to do with some of the limitation on choices at the time, but that's the media's fault, you know, for, you know, we didn't force CNN to go to a 24-hour news cycle.
No,
we didn't force, you know, MSNBC, Fox, to ad nauseum to then follow suit, because now you have 24 hours of airtime to fill. You know, back in the day, it was, you know what, if you wanted to watch the news, your ass was up at 7 in the morning and you were watching it, or your ass was parked on the couch at 5 or 6 o'clock at night, and that's all there was.
And you want to watch A-Team, it's Friday at 8 o'clock, there's no VCR.
Right.
Kiss,
you know,
my ass.
Whereas now, you got 24 hours of airtime to fill, and so there is that rush to be first, to be, you know, to just have that meh quality about
opinion,
it.
Opinion got on the front page. It used to be on the back.
Right.
That's the biggest difference, because they got the clickety clicks and they got the cells and people that, you know, it's kind of, dude, it's the Obi-Wan thing. Everything's true from your own point of view.
Right.
Right.
So if your own point of view dictates truth, then people are going to put stuff out there to cater to that.
Well, also because of the digital compression of like money and clicks and trading for dollars, dollars for digital cents. You've got so many people shoving, like, if I see another video of that giraffe in New York from a local news outlet, I'm going to throw something out the window. Because it's one of those things.
I have successfully avoided the giraffe, and I'm pretty proud of it.
You should be proud of it, because it's annoying.
I have no idea what it is.
It's cute. It's cute.
It's a giraffe.
It birthed, didn't it? Did it happen?
I don't know yet. Every day it was like, oh, it's about to give birth. Every single day.
I always wonder how giraffes stay alive, because it takes forever from the food get to their mouth, to their stomach. Like, what the hell?
By that point, you're puke.
Oh,
slowly.
Dry heave. 3 hours later.
But the point more along being is that giraffes are awesome. I like giraffes. I'm not hating on giraffes. I saw the angry commenters coming. Like, oh no, he hates giraffes.
I'm going to start it.
Yes.
Jared, would you like to care to comment on your anti-giraffe agenda?
It all started when I was 7. No, but the thing is that local should be local, right? So you're not going to – like if you see something a local newspaper throw out 50 stories in a day just to get all the clickety-clicks, then you lose relevancy. For us, it's our path, and it's not for everybody. It's not, but it's 5 to, you know, 10 or 11 stories in email every day that – are actually about what we're doing. And yes, we'll mention national conversations if they directly tie to what we're doing. And why?
Right.
Because we can't tell you about Washington better than somebody in Washington, but we can tell you about Detroit really well.
Chair, that's the one thing that drives me bananas about Channel 4, Channel 7, Fox 2. You look at their Facebook pages, and every day there will be a story about something kooky that went on in Virginia. But we're not in Arizona, and everyone will get outraged. It's one of those like illicit outrage stories, mm-hmm. and their messages will just be just read it. You're like, oh my God, these people. But it's like, what the hell does this have to do with Detroit? You're the freep.
Yeah.
Like, why are you writing about some guy that whatever his thing and stuff in there?
Yeah, right. We'll never run AP Wire copy for that reason.
Right.
Because we're not going to, you know, we're not going to try to be a conduit for information because the internet's reordered that. It used to be where a TV outlet or whatever was supposedly your view on the entire world. But since the media landscape has changed, you know what? There's other outlets that are going to handle that giraffe a lot better. And that's okay. I don't need all the clickety clicks from the giraffe.
The giraffe channel. It's on 1202.
Wow. Like
the bell should have gotten rung for that. Thank you.
There you go.
So I guess then, you know, other than the assimilation, like, I guess what's coming up for Daily Detroit?
Well, there's a lot of things coming up around coverage, a lot of things that are starting to actually happen. They've been talked about for a long time. Words arriving that after opening day, we're going to get ourselves a working streetcar.
Name Desire.
Or Stella. Dan. For the queue line. So they don't want to do it on opening day, but they're hoping to do it like
that would be a hell of a stress test, though.
That would be. But apparently, they're basically running them down the street almost every day right now.
Yeah, they run past my building every day. Awesome.
Yeah, it's very.
I'm excited.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. Now that you actually see it happening, it's definitely an exciting thing.
Never mind.
Go ahead.
Wow.
Exciting for who?
I was like, when you were like, Arnold coming out.
If I'm coming out from, like, I'm going to talk about this again, and I'm going to beat this into the ground. If I'm coming in from the suburbs and I'm going to go downtown, I'm not going to stop at Wayne State and then take the Q downtown.
It's not for you, Bob.
I know. It's for Quicken employees.
Well, and people who actually live there because.
That's why it's Q line.
People lay down there. They do.
Who?
Well, the population of downtown is roughly a little bit larger than the population of Ferndale now. It's been growing and growing, and there's more and more people in that area. It is not a full transit solution. We need a lot more blah, blah. This is a bigger story for another time.
I got on the Loft Warehouse today and looked at some condos downtown and lost my shit at like $465,000.
It's absurd.
1,000 square foot condos.
It's absurd.
Shut up.
Serious.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so what's interesting that's happening with that is the downtown is skyrocketing while the average, I just got a report today from a site called Adobo using all their internal listings sharing that actually Detroit rents as a city as a whole, one bedroom and two bedrooms are actually down a percentage point.
Jesus.
So it's like that's how things are shifting. So the rest of the city's rents are going down a little.
Well, but so is that
because the central city is going up.
But is that because the rental market, like I would assume the rental market there is dropping because it's easier and lower price to purchase those at this point?
To a degree. But the other issue that you've got at hand here is there's a lot of out of town money. I'm working on a data post around the actual quantifying the numbers. But
wait, you're going to try to put facts on the internet? Jerry, we know how that goes.
I know. It's terrible. Terrible.
Better make them alternative.
I'll make sure they're played with Nirvana.
The new facts alternative.
My alternative facts will be facts presented in the tone of Nirvana.
There you go.
But the thing is that there's a ton of out-of-town money flowing in distorting the market. So if you sell a place in Brooklyn for $1.5 million, buy something in Detroit for $500,000, you still got $1 million left over, you go do whatever you need to do. If you see who's grabbing all those listings on Curb and all that other stuff, the market is very hot, but there is not a lot of actual building stock. There isn't that much to actually grab right now that doesn't require a ton of work. And that work.
So is it just constantly flipping then? Or is it, you know, is it?
I think so. I think there's a flip. There's starting to be a flip thing. There was a house that came up on the market that Curb wrote about that sold for $635 a year ago and now $700 and change.
Jesus.
So there's a part of that going on, too, with just like that flip and turn.
I'm secretly hoping mine does the same thing.
Well, yeah, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, why wouldn't you? You actually live there, which is a nice thing.
I actually live there, exactly. Yeah.
There are humans at your residence. I can verify this.
True.
But the market's really distorted right now. It's going to be interesting to see if there can be a way to provide a way for folks to get involved in this without having cash. Because like some of these houses, they're going for $100, $125, $150, but somebody with cash is coming in and buying them all. And if you're like a regular Joe who needs a mortgage, you can't even get to the house because somebody grabbed it in a day with cash.
Right.
And so that is part of the equity, home equity conversation as well, where it's like we need to create opportunities for our middle class as well. And so there are some concerns and challenges with what's going on for sure.
Interesting.
We had a long conversation about that one, getting middle class down there. I'm just saying.
it's happening. Like, you look at neighborhoods like Grandmont Rosedale, you're starting to see movement for sure. You're looking at West Village, you're seeing movement for sure. Parts of Southwest Detroit, Hubbard Farms, you're seeing different stuff starting to happen in that middle class, but not in the core. East English Village is seeing a renaissance, is seeing a lot more activity.
Fashion district. They're putting in a Bucharest grill like down the street from my house, and I'm so excited.
Oh, yeah. There's going to be the Bucharest. There's also going to be Slide, the hamburger place. And then there's the
brewing folks, too, are opening up their brewery right there, right?
Yep. Yeah. And of course, you've got Kozo's Chicken and Waffles.
Totally.
So yeah. Good.
Yeah, but it's still going to come down to, is that where I want to raise my kids?
Schools.
Yeah.
Schools.
Is that? Yeah.
That's what keeps me out of Detroit.
That's the next thing to work on. So that's why we've been actually working with Chalkbeat to run some of their stories, because they're doing some – it's a nonprofit, national nonprofit, actually doing some really interesting work around education. We're also beefing up a little bit of what we're doing. I was just at a press event today with this foundation that's actually providing second backup services basically to teach people to read. So in suburban districts, like 90% of the kids come in with the ability to basically read in kindergarten. In Detroit, that's reversed.
Holy shit, 10%.
And so that
is – seriously?
Yeah. And so this foundation is basically raising money. They've been serving the city for about 10 or 15 years. They're raising money because they're providing reading services, you know, an hour a day with all these different kids one-on-one, because there's so much learning gap that has to be made up there. And so when you start in a bad situation as far as reading and learning goes, you are done all the way up the chain. And so if you look at a district like Detroit and you see how poorly that they score in actual scores against other like districts in size or in other metrics, it's terrifying. And if we don't fix it, Detroit's comeback will not happen unless we address the schools and are very serious about it. And we need to put the kids first. And I don't see that happening right now, because it's all about charters or this or control or that. And nobody's talking about these kids are not learning to read, man. And like, it's that simple. Teach the kids how to read.
We had a charter school in Detroit as one of our clients, and it was really interesting because of the dynamic. We have other schools that we work with, but the school in Detroit was like, no, our kids, like, the meals they have here are the meals they have. Well, I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, this is what they eat, not when they get off school.
All day.
Yep. And they were talking about some of the challenges. I mean, we did everything we could to help them. Unfortunately, they tanked last year. But it was one of those things. There's a big, big challenge in Detroit because the gap is so much further than it is from, you know, the schools in suburbia, things
just
like that.
Just begs me the question, how do we reach these kids?
Nice.
Kimo, on that note, Chair, we find you at dailydetroit.com. Podcast is, do you have a special page for that? Or
it's the Daily Detroit Happy Hour, and then we'll be doing more with the Daily Podcast next week.
Awesome. Well, hey, we are going to wrap things up for episode 186. This was a great podcast, if I do say so. I'd like to thank our guests, Tom Lawrence, Stephanie Menard, Jeremiah, Dr. Hook. Do us all a favor. Drink up your drinks, get your phone numbers. Oh, and I'd like to thank our sponsors, Fellows and Bombas.
And Hostgator. Totally, yeah.
Appreciate your support, keeping the lights on. Do us all a favor, drink up your drinks, get your phone numbers. You don't got to go home. You just got to get the hell out of here. See you next week. Drive careful. Beat it.
The emergency destruct system is now activated.
Conan, what is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of their women.
Long live Flash. You've saved your life. Have a nice day.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Nice shooting, son. What's your name?
Murphy.
Make the run. The run.
Game over, man. Game over.
It's over, Johnny. It's over.
Nothing is over. Nothing. You just don't turn it off.
I can't say no, and I don't really want to, so.
Well, especially with the back doors open.
Yo! Hold up! Time out! Time out! Y'all take a chill. You need to cool that shit out. And that's the double truth, Root.
Bob loves it in the can.
I hope this was as much fun for you as it was for me.
That's why I like it in the can.
Joe, own the cheese. Ohms.
Fear me.
My job is to make sure this program is morally upright and cultural and wholesome.
Shut up, Mimsy! Shut up, Mimsy! Shut up, Mimsy!
Why would, like, Buick put their cars next to, like, the Bentleys? Like, why? That's not marketing.
The alphabet.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, I can't take that position.
That analogy sucks because it's right.
Because you're getting your 8-track tuned up.
Are we at a break yet?
No!
Yeah, so now I'm just, like, doing, like, stupid stuff to make me laugh.
Venture capital is not the end game.
When are we going to talk about me?
Jane, you ignorant slut.
It's my show. I can say what I want. Yeah.
Kiss my ass. Go home. Unplug. Get off the goddamn internet. You are everything that is wrong with the internet right now.
You're so white right now.
I'm the whitest guy in the room. Just explain it to me.
Show now.
I love this city. I was banging on the way.
Really? Should we talk about the tag team? Should I keep going or should I stop?
Can I just say, it's been great being on a show that talks about Mickey Rooney dying for 20 seconds and then poop for 10 minutes.